Welcome to the Scottish Curling Podcast, a brand new show providing you access to the legends of the roaring game here in the country that made the sport what it is today. I'm Peter Joyce, digital lead at Scottish Curling, and along with CEO Vincent Bryson, we'll be taking you on a journey through the history of the sport, as well as taking a look at the future of the game through the eyes of the people who lived the dream on the ice. This is a real passion project for us here at Scottish Curling, and we hope you enjoy finding out more about the heroes who have swept their names into the annals of history. Our first guest is an absolute belter. With a World Championship gold medal, two European senior gold medals, a European mixed gold medal, and four Olympic appearances to her name, there was no better person for us to have on first. It is, of course, the hero herself, Jackie Lockhart. Enjoy.
So, welcome, Jackie Lockhart, multiple Olympian, multiple Scottish champion, a CV that long that actually it would take me almost an hour to get through it, but welcome to the premier edition of the Scottish Curling Podcast.
I'd just like to add to that intro, reigning seniors champion.
This is true, yes. Reigning seniors world champion, yeah, this is also true.
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah, I've had a very long career.
And hopefully we're going to hear all about your on-ice exploits, but a little bit of what Jackie Lockhart's life is like away from the ice, which is also equally interesting. Jackie, I'm Vincent Bryson, we've met many times, and with me here is Peter Joyce, and so hopefully between the three of us we'll have a good natter for the next however long it will be. I have had some of my spies though say that you are prone to a chat, so this might need three parts, who knows, and you can blame the Milne family for telling me that little fact, okay? So one thing when we were doing our research, Jackie, I live in East Kilbride, and I didn't realise that you are a lassie for the Gow. Is this correct?
I am. I'm a Les Mahego girl. Yeah, born and bred there. Stayed there for 24 years, but eventually found love, as they say, and moved up to Stonehaven. And I've been up in Stonehaven for almost 36 years now. So I've been away more than I've been at Les Mahego, but I do like being a Les Mahego lass.
I think that's a very Scottish thing, isn't it? It's like you might have lived somewhere for 50 years, but home's where you were when you were young, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I was just back down there at the weekend catching up with all my school chums because, of course, I turned 60 this year, which is quite unbelievable. So we had a little gathering back down the road. So my husband said when I came back up there, he says, oh, yeah, he says, Gow accent's back again. I'll have to start practising my posh voice for other interviews that may appear.
Ah, excellent. Perhaps more on that later. So when you were young, we obviously know you as a curler, but that wasn't your first go on the ice. You were a skater when you were a young girl, is that right?
I was. I started ice skating when I was four. Right. My mum and dad were both curlers, so they went to Hamilton Ice Rink quite a bit. And my mum saw an advert saying that there was ice skating on a Sunday. So I fancied that. So, yeah, a lot of very early morning starts on a Sunday. Had to be at the ice rink for 6:30 in the morning to get crystal clear ice so that you could do your figure skating in the morning. And then after you'd done all your figure skating, you did free skating. And I generally was there from 6 in the morning till probably about 12 o'clock. And then we headed home. So, yeah, lots of Saturday, Sunday mornings at the ice rink.
And do you think those moments on the ice, Jackie, do you think that sort of started your love for ice sports and for what it was to become later on?
So I absolutely loved my ice skating, but as the years were going on, I actually started getting too tall for the sport. And I hated going to bed early on a Saturday night because I missed Starsky and Hutch. So I enjoyed it, but I'd sit to my mum some. I'm getting to that age, I don't want to go to my bed early anymore on a Saturday night, so I'm going to quit. So I quit. And being my mum, she says, well, you have to look for something else to do. And long story short, I went to Hamilton to go shopping. I was going to spend my birthday money, and my mum was going curling. But she was a player short, so she said, my Jackie will fill in. So off I went to get a second-hand pair of shoes out of the cupboard in Hamilton Ice Rink, somebody else's brush, and on I went to play with my mum and her cronies in a local competition, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I think I didn't have a fear of going on the ice because I'd skated for 10 years. So that made it much easier for me. So next thing I know, I'm joining the Hamilton Young Curlers and they play a Saturday morning. So I changed my Sunday morning to a Saturday morning.
That's awesome. So when you were young, there was obviously some significant impacts in your life as well. You lost your dad at a young age, didn't you?
Well, so now there you go. There's the first mistake. I did an article for a magazine and I told them that I had lost my papa.
Ah.
Now that's a right Glasgow thing to have a gran and a papa. But she was from Englandshire, and she thought that my papa was my father. And actually, after the article was out, I was thinking, oh God, my poor dad died when I was 14, but he didn't he? He died when he was 79 and I was like 50 something or other. So
Well, thank God for that, right? So yes, well, that was two sources that gave us that, though. So we've obviously the Times and the Daily Record. So apologies for that, Jackie.
no, don't worry. That's the thing about media. You can say what you like, and sometimes a lot of media throughout my career, I've said one thing and they've written another. And that can be a difficult thing to live with if you are at the top level of your sport.
Yeah.
And I know that that was one of the things we got when we were in our Olympic era or at the top level was media training. And I'm sure the youngsters, Bruce, Eve, and Rebecca, and some of the youngsters that are going forward just now, they'll all be getting the same thing because you do need media training.
Yeah, right. So we'll move on then.
Yeah.
The still youth though. But you made your international debut young, didn't you? 1983.
I did. I'm going to tell you I was lucky.
Right.
And I think I just was in the right place at the right time. When I started junior curling, there wasn't even a Scottish junior ladies.
Right.
I went and represented a rink from Hamilton to the first ever Scottish junior ladies competition. And that was great. So I got picked up by, I think I played with Christine Allison as it was at the time, Margaret Craig and Isabel Torrance. And I got to play lead for these girls. And it was great. It was great fun. Christine, we lost the final of the juniors 2 years in the trot. And then she aged out. So then I started playing with Isabel Torrance. And we played the Scottish Juniors and won it in, I'm sure it was 1983. And then we went on as Scottish Junior Champions. We got to play in the European playdowns to see who represented Scotland at European Championships. And I'm sure it was down in Kelso we played that. And lo and behold, the Scottish Juniors won the whole thing. And the next thing we know, we're off to the Europeans. Oh my God. But it was such an eye-opener for me. I'm going to say I was only probably, I don't know, 17, 16, 17 at the time. Yeah, so that was a real experience.
But European Championships, you've been there 11 times. Is that right?
Wow, yeah. I always got there, Vinny, but I didn't medal that often when I got there. And do you know what I'm going to tell you? I think actually I'm sure we didn't believe we could win. I mean, it was great to win a championship and then you went out to these things and sometimes you just thought, oh, I hope we do well. Are we good enough? So yeah, it's pretty annoying. I've got a lot of fourth places and that is gut-wrenching. Let me tell you, when you look back in your career, fourth place is the worst ever.
Let me ask you something about that, because we've chatted briefly about some of these things before, about mentality. As a young female athlete and now as a really respected multiple medal winning, more championships than we could run through here, those appearances, is there a thing that you think that you were glaringly missing when you were younger to maybe go from those fourth places to podium that the athletes are getting now? Because you talked about media training now being so important. I suppose when you look at that psychology preparation, or the kind of preparation of mentality of how to go on the ice, what did you think that you were missing perhaps, when you were younger then?
Probably confidence and belief, if I'm being really honest with you. I mean, a lot of people, if you ask them, Oh, do you know Jackie Lockett? And I'll say, oh, yeah, she's that cocky little youngster that we used to see. But I think that for me, that was a front that I used to put on because I was actually quite shy as a youngster, and not that confident. But I would pretend to be confident. So that's probably one of the things that I lacked when I was younger was the actual the belief that I could do it. And I was a bit. It took me a long time before I matured, that's for sure. And that's probably, and I like that now that I'm 60 because I'm still immature. But when you're young, you kind of need to be, you need to have a mature head on you to play at that level and win. And I think that's why I won when I was younger, playing down the rink. And it took me a long time to actually get myself up into a skipping position and be mature enough to take the role on. But I knew that I always wanted to do that. So I'm loving the fact that I'm having a great career at the end of my curling career. I did well at the beginning and in the middle it was a little bit ropey. I wasn't sure where I fitted in. Was I second? Was I third? Kind of really wanted to skip, but a lot of the selection processes, they didn't believe I could take that position as skip. And I'll tell you one person, years ago I won the Scottish and somebody said to me, did I win the Scottish? Somebody said to me, you'll never make a skip. Oh, I was so mad. I was thinking, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that was the best thing that that person ever told me was that I couldn't do
Right.
it.
Good. Well, I'm glad you did. So going back, there's quite a basic thing that Peter and I are curious about, and we hope that everyone else listening is first time you wear the jersey, first time the logo's there, first time your name's in the back, it says Scotland. How does it feel? What was going through young Jackie Lockhart's mind then?
I actually couldn't believe it. It was great. It was absolutely fantastic. Everybody else is elated round about you, and I was kind of thinking, oh, but it was fantastic getting the jumper and you put it on and you've got Scotland on your back and you've got your name. And my parents were really proud. So when we were young, they came to all the championships that we went to, the big ones anyway. So it was like a party for them, and it was something more serious for us. Yeah, and not it's a great feeling. It really is a good feeling.
Would that have been Jackie Steele at the time then?
I was, yes. I've got a few. Well, I did have a few jumpers with Jackie Steele on it, and then eventually became Lockhart. And I was looking back at pictures recently there. My mum and dad used to come out, and they had sweatshirts made that said Jackie's mum, Jackie's dad. And Jackie was the fun-loving character in the team back in the day when I played second. I would play my two shots and then the rest of the time was mine. I'd be waving, I'd be checking out who was in the crowd. I would not be concentrating one bit. And I think that's why I got a bad reputation when the selection processes came into play, but luckily I survived quite a few of them.
Jackie, you mentioned that for you on the international stage, it was largely about confidence and belief. What do you think made it so different going from, winning Scottish championships to then competing internationally and feeling that way?
I'm going to go back to 1980. We went to the World Championships, and Isabel Torrens was our skip. And we went to the World Championships in 1985 and came back with a world silver medal, losing to Sweden in the final. But it was great. It was the year of the silver broom. So we came back, we got loads of praise. It was fun, wonderful. We won the next year and went back to Kelowna in British Columbia. It was wonderful, 1986. You only went with four players. You didn't have a fifth player at that time. And out there, so the long story short, out there, Isabel got sick and we had nobody to take that fourth position. And I played second at the time, but luckily our parents were out there and Mrs. Torrens was a very well-known curler. She was an ex-Scottish champion, pretty good curler in her day. She was there. So we thought, well, we'll get Mrs. Torrens to come on and play for us. But where was Mrs. Torrance, along with my mum and dad, visiting the vineyard in Kelowna? And we needed her to play in the afternoon, so no mobile phones at the time, so we have to chase after getting her chased down, eventually find her. She comes back, And then we have to decide who's skipping the game, because she didn't want to skip Margaret Richardson or Margaret Craig, as she was. She didn't want to skip either. She was a third. So little old Jackie is like, I'll do it. Nothing kind of scared me either. So I skipped that game, and we played against Marlon Dart, or Marlon Bodo, as she was then. And it was the best thing ever. So that was... People were shouting my name out as we went up and down the ice. The ice rink, the arena was filled. And just the thrill of being in that position was what moved me from being not as a confident little youngster to actually loving it and feeling like I owned the space. That was my arena. And ever since then, that was that day after we played that game, we lost 7-4. And then I remember saying, I don't care how long it takes, I want to skip a world championship at some point and win a gold medal. And it took me, I think, 16 or 17 years to do it, but I did it. That's a long goal. That is a long journey.
But 10 world championship appearances, a gold, a silver and a bronze. 84 games in total. I'm just reading the World Curling Database here, so this is other people's information. That's pretty impressive, though, especially given... the era that you were in. You know, there was lots of competitive Scottish teams.
Yes, then, yes.
Who did you know like playing against?
Dordi Norby from Norway, she was always trouble to play against. And so was Denmark when we were playing. And I guess you just have to, if you lose to these girls, then you just got to go back and find out why you lost to them. And then the next time you get the chance to play against them, try and beat them. I was a bugger. I would go to these events and I'd beat Sweden and I'd beat Canada and I'd beat the big teams during the league, the round robin section. And then I'd lose to them when you got to the semi-final and I could have kicked myself. And I don't know how you change that. And it is a mindset, how you change from beating them during the round robin and then beating them also when you get to the playoff stages.
I don't think that changes over time, though. I mean, we even saw something similar this year with our own team, Mowat, going for Scotland this year, whereby I remember reading some of the Canadian media, they were saying Scotland beat Canada in the round robin, but don't look great. And then as soon as the round robin finishes, these boys put in performances, you know, like wow, that's curling from a different age.
Yeah.
So just me saying that as a relatively... an experienced newcomer who happens to work here, that's everybody saying those levels of performance. So that was going a lot on with you, even in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, whereby it's just one of those things that tournament play brings out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes, I'm not going to swear, but sometimes bad things happen, don't they?
Yeah.
But I think what is so impressive when you watch the youngsters now, how consistently good they are. I mean, we had our 20-year anniversary dinner there in Aberdeen and we got Bruce up to speak. So we had a question and answer session with three Olympians, which is pretty impressive. Tom Brewster was there, myself as the old woman, Tom as the Iceman, and then Bruce Mow as the young goat. So it was a great night, but it just shows you. And we said that at the time, when you win your championship, you're the best of the best. That's it. No airs and graces about it. It's just that's how simple it is. And they're the best of the best now. And they're so good. So much better than we were. But that's what we're saying. Would they have had the same consistency or the same gameplay when they played on bad ice? You played two or three times during the week, and if you're lucky, once in the weekend, they're playing. They're on the ice non-stop, in the gym. It's a different ball game now, but it is wonderful. Even as an ex-player, at that level, to watch the consistency. Very impressive.
So, 2002, you win the world title. Did you think, I'm the best?
Did I? Well, do you know what? After watching Rona win her Olympic gold medal, and I never even got a peep at being selected for that because I'd had a baby. I was married. I worked. I had two small children at that time. And they said, you're not committed to the game. And I was like, oh, God, I am. I still want to play. I've got parents who look after my kids. I'm still committed. So I never even got looked at for selection, but I still could enter the Scottish Championship. So when Rona, I had to sit and watch Rona win the Olympics, and it was fantastic. Everybody sat up that night after midnight watching. It was great. But I knew that I was playing in the Scottish Championships when these girls came back. And I was determined to prove to everybody else that we were as good as they were. And when they won, I thought, wow, we can win them, because we can play and be as good as these girls are. We could be just as good. So when they came back and we played the Scottish Championships, the arena down in Braehead was full, because she had all her fans who had watched it came from all over to see her win the Scottish Championships and go to the Worlds. And then Jackie Lockhart put a spanner in that works. And then I was like, what's going to happen now? It was what a big gulp after we'd won that. But I really did believe that because Rona had won her Olympic gold medal, that we could do exactly the same.
Jackie, I'm really interested. You were speaking about selection for a bit there. Was there never a moment where you felt that it would affect your love of curling, not being able to go to the Olympic Games at that point? Because the way you spoke about, you know, bouncing back and then going to the Scottish and going to the World Championships, I think that's really interesting.
I've got my feet firmly set in the ground. I'm married to the Lockhart family, and they do not let you get above yourself, that's for sure. Never, ever been put on a pedestal in this household whatsoever. So if you win something, that's great. You move on. If you lose something, you learn how not to do it, and then you try again. So I could easily pick myself up and get on with it. That's a skill, though, I think. And I often said that in some of the talks that I did, that you have to learn to be a good loser before you can be a great winner.
Right. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think after we won our Worlds and I'd been to a couple of Olympics, I got called in to do some talks at schools or locally for brownies or guides, or actually the Rotary, the business associations, anybody locally wanted to hear your story. And I think you have to look at what motivates you to keep going. Because my mum, I won the World Championships in 2002, and I think my mum thought that was it. She can stop, she'll be a mum, she'll look after her children. You don't need to do it again, was what she used to tell me. You've already done it. I said, I want to do it again. I want to do it again. I watched is it Stephen Henry, the snooker player? Time and time and time again, win that world championship, go back, win it again, win it again. And I was thinking, how does he motivate himself to do that? Because he must have something. And I didn't know what it was until you actually start doing it yourself. And it's just, is it the need? It's hard to know. It's in my blood. I don't know why I can't stop. I just love the sport so much.
Yeah. And we live in an age whereby, you know, we live in this data is everything and rationality is everything, whereas it isn't really.
No.
It helps you understand some things.
You don't understand that until you're older. When you're young, I remember when we had the psychologist come in when we were being selected for, let's say, I think it was Torino 2006. And I'm like, how much does this mean to you? And as a youngster, you're going to say, it means everything. It's do or die. I won't be able to live with myself if I don't get selected. That really is nonsense. And you don't understand that until you're older. You can't make it that high a level. Otherwise, you're devastated. And how do you come back from that if you say it's everything? It has to mean a lot, but it's not going to end your career to lose one time. You just have to get back down in the grassroots and try again.
So in our notes here, Peter's written a phrase and it says symbolic twist, using the same stone that Rona used to win the Olympics. And a few weeks later, did you go and seek out the final stone? Were you even allowed to do that? How did you make sure it was exactly the same stone, so that you could then create your own, and what is a fantastic duology in Scottish sport, that these two amazing female athletes, only a few weeks apart, ascended the same level of Everest and won gold. How did you manage that?
Don't give me any credit for it at all, because I'm not clever enough to have gone out and seeked that actual stone. The stones from the Olympics that year were, I think at the time, World Curling Federation stones. So they were actually transferred from Salt Lake City to Bismarck for the Ladies Worlds. And of course, we had Mikey, we had Kenny Moore, we had these guys supporting us out there. We had coaches, we had Kate Brewster, I had my own coach, Isabel Torrance. And that was their job. I actually was just happy enough to turn up and do as I was told, to be honest with you. As long as I was on the ice playing, I was happy. And they did all the rest of the work. So Mike could tell me that the stones were the same stones they'd played at the Olympics. So of course they're all barcoded underneath. They knew how they were running, which pairs to play. And we matched them. We worked the same way as the guys had done from the Olympic Games. So when we got to the finals and we had topped a round robin table, which was incredible at the time. I think that was a first. We didn't win all our games, but we topped a round robin table, and lo and behold, Canada came in fourth. They weren't having the best championships. I'm thinking, great, we're going to meet Canada in the semi-final. How bad is that? But we got to select the stones we wanted to play with. So that gave you an added confidence as well that the stones had done what they were supposed to do in Salt Lake City, and hopefully we could do the same with them in Bismarck, North Dakota. So yeah, and then when the finals came, and again we got to choose which colour, we chose the yellow stones because they were very good. And I chose the two stones that Rona played with. And is it fate? Is it luck? Because you could have won the game early and been off and not had to throw that C yellow four, or we could have not been had the last stone at the last end. But yeah, it was kind of freaky that she played her last stone to win with that stone, and so did I. Yeah, unbelievable. I don't know if I got that much credit for it, because all the credit still went to the Olympic girls at one with that C4. But I was quite happy to ride the crest of a wave at the time when we won.
Jackie, I'm just looking at the score line from that semi-final against Canada. Where did you feel like you had a different level of confidence going into that one? You're playing in North America
Absolutely.
against.
Absolutely not. I was absolutely petrified, seriously petrified. And I was so petrified. So back in the day, there's no free guard zones. There's no, yeah, you just play. So I was so scared to take the game on in case, be it went peak tong, that she'd put one in, I'd hit it out. She'd put another one in, I'd hit it out. And honestly, halfway through that game, there was people in the crowd shouting, "Boring!" It's like, I don't care. But I was petrified, absolutely petrified. So yeah, and I was playing with three youngsters down in front of me, and they're looking up to me to be the confident leadership skip. But Sheila Swan was a great third. She was a great statistician. She knew the game inside out. I just go on my instinct. So I need to be in the moment to know what I'm going to play. And generally, my gut instinct is the right one that I'm choosing. But Sheila was good. She would always quiz you. Is this the shot you want to play? Do you want to play the draw? What were you thinking of first? These kind of things. I think we should try this. So I like playing more. And she was a youngster, but she was great at the game.
And Sheila's obviously gone on to be one of the vanguards of wheelchair curling, having been the national coach for so long, and silver medal this year as well on home
Yeah,
soil in
I
Hurley.
mean, she's had a great career, putting her experiences on the ice and giving that to other people, which is something to be really proud of. I never wanted. I love curling, but I didn't want it to be a busman's holiday. So I never wanted to be involved too much in the sport. I like to do it, and then I like to walk away. And then I worked for Shell in their information department for 30 years. So yeah, I like to keep them separate. But yeah.
But you win that semi-final in an extra end, and then you've got the final the next night. So how do you go from winning in North America against a North American team.
I know.
All the expectations on, you win that game. How do you then come down from that high to be level for a final?
Was it a high? I think it was more of a shock. We actually we all went back. The guys were the support team were so chuffed. So we go back and we do our analysis and we check how the game went, where we could have made it better. And then we had practice ice, I think, in the morning because we weren't playing till later on. So they gave us practice ice, and when we went on to go and play the practice ice, the ice melted. It started getting soft. So after two ends and us not managing to get the stones up the other end, they said you'll have to come off. So there was a scenario that we were never used to. So we had to just pack up our stuff, go away and try and have some lunch and forget about that. And then hopefully the ice, well, it was by the time we came back to play the finals, the ice was back up to normal, and it was, we had to go on and just play. So none of us, apart from Katrina Fairweather, none of us could eat a thing that day. I literally felt my stomach was churning. I mean, that was a big, big thing. I had waited 17 years to be that skip that was playing in the World Championship final, and I so wanted to win. Yeah, and you're trying to look confident, but I've never been as nervous in my whole life. Until you start playing. Once you start playing, the nerves go, because people often ask skips, what were you feeling and what were you thinking when you delivered that last stone? And to be honest, you're not. You're just in curling mode, and you're just doing it. If you think too much, it will affect you. So you're just in curling mode.
Did you start thinking at all when, after five ends of not scoring, you score a three and then immediately concede a three? Because I'd be terrified.
Is that just not the normal? Or
Oh,
it was back then. I'll tell you what, the one thing that did scare me was when we got to actually, and it was, we had the hammer going down the last end and in the final, and I had been preparing myself the whole end to draw the forefoot because they had a stone in the forefoot and they were guarding and they were guarding and we were ripping them off and they were guarding. And then Maria Pritz played her last stone, and she just, the ice was changing. We'd been on there for 3 hours. It was frosty on the outside. We didn't have the same ice conditions as the youngsters are getting today, or the international stars are getting today. It was frosty. It was weird. So she had to throw a little bit more ice because it was slowing down, and she overthrew it, and she come right into the forefoot. So boy, I had spent all this time thinking I'm playing the one foot, I'm drawing the forefoot, to all of a sudden when she'd finished her stone, I said to Sheila, I'm hitting that. And I looked up and I could see as I was sliding up the other end, I could see all my parents with their hands in their heads. I looked up to the coaching bench, and I'm sure I saw Mike Hawley's hands in his head thinking, what the hell is she doing? She should be drawing the forefoot. But I didn't know the weight, and I didn't know if it was going to run. It was running straight on frosty ice. And I said to Sheila, I'm not going to play heavy. I'm just going to play enough weight. If I catch it, I can run it. I can on the nose or just in the inside, it's perfect. And God bless her little cotton sock. I'm sure she was thinking, you are an idiot. You shouldn't be playing this shot. But she said, no, I think that's you. You'll be fine. That's the right shot. And she gave me every confidence to go up the other end, and I did it. It was kind of a light barrier weight, but it run poker straight, and everybody in the audience, you could hear them saying, we were shouting, yes, no, yes, no, clean. If you can hear that, you're thinking it's got to be pretty damn close. So yeah, we did it. I don't know what we'd have done if I hadn't. I'd have got an absolute rollicking.
What's that moment like when you've finally done it? I mean, I know everyone says that it's jubilation and it's great, and we see it as sort of normal guys who, see people like you, international superstars, do these things. But what's that really like? What's the feeling at that point?
Oh God, that's weird. For me, it was just, I actually think it was just re relief that it had taken me so long to get there, and I did it. But it's great. I mean, it's like all your Christmases have come at once. and you just, and you can't believe it. But let me tell you, it goes in a flash. Before you know it, I was having my 20-year celebration. You're thinking, God, and I can hardly remember the whole thing now. People will say, oh, I watched it on YouTube, and I think, wow. I actually haven't done that. I'm not sure I actually do want to ever watch it back on YouTube in case I see too many mistakes or good parts that I did. But yeah, it's unbelievable, but it passes so very, very quickly. I think what's great now is the youngsters have got, or social media is there and television's much more prominent, that they can capture that moment and have it forever. I feel like a lot of my stuff in my career back in the days, it's on a picture. There's not a lot of TV footage of stuff. There is, I think, if you probably, because TSN and a lot of the Canadians did the coverage, but we never really had BBC watching any of our games. So yeah, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's great. I love watching the good stuff, but maybe not so much back in my day. But I did jump up and down like an absolute maniac. I'm surprised I managed to stay upright on the ice. I was jumping about that much.
Oh, you earned that, I think.
I think so, yes. We did. We had a great party. I've never seen so many grown men cry that night after we got our medal presentation. All the spectators that went from Scotland to watch it, they were all in tears. It was great. And I was thinking, oh my God, I've done this. So yeah, it is special. But like I said earlier, my family, very much, yeah, good for you. Now go and make the tea. You've got the tea to make, so I'm pretty much feet in the ground, and that's why I laugh when you say, "Oh, you've got a long international career, and it's this length, it's that length," and it's strange because I don't think about it like that, but I just love the game, and I just want to keep going. I do want to set goals. I wanted to win a Scottish Junior Championships, which I did, a Ladies Championship, which I did. Seniors, which I have done, and I'm 60 now. I'd like to play in the Masters. I'd like to have a Masters title. So I've got little goals that keep me going, so that I can challenge myself. I was very tempted to retire this year. Craig and I, my husband and I, are both retired, and we want to go and do some travelling. But some of the travelling, my brother's in New Zealand, and I keep thinking I need to go and see him. But the best time to go is probably January, February, March, and that's when all the big competitions are on. So my brother keeps saying, when are you coming to see me? I said, oh, when I eventually stop curling. But that seems to be like it's never going to happen.
Oh, good. Right, from a point of view, that's good.
Oh, my Craig said to me, he says, you're like a punch drunk boxer who just doesn't know when to quit. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's probably true. Very true.
Hopefully not for a long time, yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked about O2 there. And O2 was the pinnacle of that mountain. That was the World Championships. You've obviously been to four Olympic Games, but didn't get on the podium.
No.
I suppose, how do you reflect on your Olympic time? And by the way, the data, we talked about data earlier. Look at World Curling. They say Jackie Lockhart, three Olympic Games, one Olympic Game exhibition. But you look at the IOC site and the Olympic site, it's four Olympic Games. So
thank you.
Everybody's got their own perspective on it, but I'll go with the IOC one, okay?
Thank you. That's the one I would go, because at the moment it's still an Olympic Games.
Yes.
And I think what we did back in Albertville in 92 was enough for the IOC then to say, yeah, this game's good enough to go forward. So I was pretty proud that we got selected. We won the championship to go to that. Maybe if I'd been playing the Scottish finals and knew that there was an Olympic event attached to it, I wouldn't have played as well in the final and won. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually know that we were going to go to that. I thought we were just going to go to the World Championship. So when I got a call saying, oh, you get to go to the Olympics as well, it was like, wow, this is fantastic. So yeah, four Olympic Games, it's pretty impressive. But to not get a medal has been one of the hardest things for me, because I would have liked a medal. It could have been any colour. And Nagano was our closest to get an Olympic medal. We played really well. I played with Kirsty Hay. I played, initially I played in the team third, but then I dropped down to second in the team. And of course we got to the semi-final, and we have to play Canada, and lost by an inch, Oh, it was, and again, ice conditions are different, and it was, yeah, so that was gut-wrenching. But we were very professional. We came off that game really late at night, tried to get some sleep because we were back on at like 9 o'clock next morning to play in the bronze medal game, and we just didn't manage to pick ourselves up. We'd put all our eggs in one basket to win that semi-final against Canada, and if it didn't happen, it was hard. So we lost that bronze medal game, and we still felt that we'd done a great job. But we came home, and I remember, I'm going to say it must have been about 6 months later, I was watching the television during the summer, and Cool Runnings was on, about the Olympic bobsleigh boys who practiced on little carts and various bits, and then went and won a medal, blah, blah, blah. And I remember, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say this now, but I remember crying my eyes out watching that movie, because that's when you realize how close you were to getting that Olympic medal, and yet how far away it was. And that really hit home. I think I tried to be very professional, so, you know, it doesn't matter, it's okay. But 6 months later, yeah, and I'm thinking, what are you crying for? That's ridiculous. But I just needed to get it out of my system, and I did. Luckily, it was just me and the television and a box of tissues. But there you go. I cried my eyes out, and then I thought, I'm not going to let this affect me. I have to keep going. So I managed another couple of Olympics after that.
Well, if we go forward 14 years from Albertville, it's 06,
Yep.
and from the outside looking in, it looks like Messi and Ronaldo are in the same team. You know, it's we're like, wow, you know, super team. But obviously, a bit of a low moment there because doing the research here, we read some of the comments that you made about not being part of the team at the end of the event. You were taken off,
Yeah.
and all the stuff you talked about emotion and confidence. What's going through Jackie Lockhart's mind in 06 when you're not part of the team that's on the ice?
That was a tough trials to the selection process. There was like, I think there was there had they had two teams that they kept competing against one another, and we'd maybe about, so that's eight, and we'd about 11 players. So they take us on a journey, and they mix and match the teams up all the time. I want to be a skip because I feel like I won the Worlds in 2002. I went to the Worlds in 2004. Rona was the Olympic champion from 2002. She wanted to be the skip as well. Little Kelly Wood was in the running there as well. She's the up and coming youngster, and it was kind of weird. And it was, how do we all gel together? Because you're playing against each other. It's your biggest rival, your biggest competitor, and then all of a sudden it has to be your friend on the ice. And that's a difficult one, because the dynamics of the team for me are tenfold. You can practice and play away and be the best player, but if you don't gel on the ice together, it's never going to work. And but the Olympic the selection team, it was up to them to do it, and it was hard. It was really hard. Initially, I got selected to play two in that team. So I got selected to be the second. Kelly Wood was going to be the third. Rona was going to be the skip, and Lynn Cameron was going to be the lead. And Debbie Knox, who was Rona's right-hand woman, was going to be the fifth man. So it was weird right from the word go. And you've got to try and practice. You toe the party line and you say the right things, but it just was difficult. And then Rona and Kelly didn't really see eye to eye on the ice, and you could see that. So halfway through our season, Kelly was put down to second, and I was put up to third, because I'm a little bit more easy Aussie. I'll see everybody's point of view. I'll be there for you. So that was easier for me to be between Kelly and Rona and get the dynamics of the ice right. But that was a tough game. That was a really tough game. None of us really gelled on or off the ice. So it is what it is. I remember having Frank Dick. I don't know if you knew Frank Dick was the big athletics coach for Daley Thompson, and to name, but what was her name? The triathlete girl, Denise Lewis. Lewis. Yeah, and I met him at a Shell gig, just after I'd won the Worlds in 2002. And then somebody telling me that I wasn't really the future of Scottish sport and they weren't going to be funding me, blah, blah, blah. And Frank said, that's ridiculous. He said, I'll give you some coaching. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm just a wee lassie from Stonehaven who's happened to win a world championship. And I've got Frank Dick, who is pretty well known in the athletics world and in the motivational speaking world. He's going to come and help us. And he did. I met him quite a few times down in Greenacres. He came to Aberdeen a few times. And some of the stuff he said was great. And that helped me get through a lot of that. But he said, if you have to give 25% of your time to somebody else, you're only competing at a lesser. You're not getting to compete at 100%. Yeah. Or as high a level as you can, because you're giving away half of your energy to somebody else. And that was kind of what it was like in the Olympics that year. And it was a shame. We finished fifth. We weren't that bad, but there was just it was either great or just didn't happen. And then I got taken off for having a terrible game. And Debbie went on. But she didn't perform as well as she wanted to either, and I was put straight back on. But yeah, it was hard sitting in the sidelines as well.
Yeah. So we move on another 4 years. There's another significant curling personality in your Olympic journey. She's obviously very young at the time, and she's the current reigning champion, which is no surprise. We're talking about Eve Muirhead. So yeah. You went to the Olympics. What would you have been then?
I was 44 years old by the time I played in my last.
At least I went under. I never went over. Yeah. At least I stayed under.
Yeah, I think I would. I turned 45 in the March, but of course it's the February. And Eve was 19, 25. I think 25 years my junior.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you are captain, but Eve is thrown last stone. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Well, that was how it was delivered to me. Having had been at three other Olympics, I had the experience that I could manage the actual Olympic Games. It's very difficult if you've never been to Olympic Games to understand how different it is and the media and how it can affect you. So I was given the vice skip role, but that I would manage the team. So I would take on all the social media and the news and blah, blah, blah. But that never happened because curling is what curling is, and they want the skip. So that young 19-year-old Eve, who got the skip's position after her five world junior titles, and she was up and coming. She was a fantastic little player. So she got the skip's position. And then it just kind of... roller coasted after that, and I just took a step back because they didn't want the vice skip to come and speak at the media. They wanted this 19-year-old to come and do it, and Eve had to, well, she had to step into big shoes. So it was and I'm sure if we'd had a great season, and I thought, yeah, we were back to having three skips in the team again, here we go once again. But I felt as though the three of us had all gelled really well. And we had, Lorna Beavers at lead. But having three skips, we actually gelled pretty well as a unit. So that was good. So that didn't worry me so much. What worried me was a 19-year-old going to an Olympics with a big target on her back and how you handle it.
So you say three skips. Who was it? It was Lorna Beavers, Eve.
Well, Lorna was her lead, but Kelly Wood was the same.
Kelly Wood.
Well, right. Kelly was a skip in her own right as well. Mm-hmm. She'd won the right to go to the Worlds in 2007. Eve won the right to go to the Worlds in 2009. So she was kind of the latest thing. And I'd just been kind of fluttering between. I played with Kelly at the time then because I had decided I was busy at work. I was busy at home. I had my kids. I had a lot on my plate, so I played vice skip to Kelly for a few years just to, I don't, just to give yourself a bit of a break. It was easier to just turn up and not actually be in charge.
But maybe, there's an element
maybe
of...
I was just being cheeky, but it was, so I did that for quite a few years. So maybe that was my downfall, having played third, then them not thinking I was up for the for skipping. Mm. But I still considered myself to be a skip, but I played vice skip.
Do you have one abiding memory looking back in your Olympic journey? Because not everybody goes to one Olympic Games and far fewer people go to four. So is there one thing that you hang on to and say, that's my moment, that's what I enjoyed?
They're all so different. They really are all so different. I think Nagano was a big one for me because that was its full medal status that year. And and I felt we were a really good team and we should have medaled there. And I really enjoyed that. We got to go to the open and closing ceremonies. So that was really exciting because in Albertville prior to that, we never got to go to the open and closing ceremonies. We just went to an ice rink and played the curling and then got all the gear and then came home. So each one was different. Nagano different as well because we never actually stayed in the Olympic Village. So I enjoyed that because we got to go to the open and closing ceremonies, but then we went away to a curling arena and were kept away from everybody else, played a game, and it felt like another world. So you come home. Torino, we didn't get to stay in the village there either. We stayed in a house that they had hired for us, along with the boys, close to the curling arena, because it was up and down the mountain you had to travel. So again, we went to the ceremony, open and closing ceremonies, but didn't stay in the village. And then Vancouver, we got to do everything. We got to stay in the village, which was wonderful. We did the open and closing ceremonies, yeah. Although we did the open and closing ceremony. So so they're all different. Nagano, I think, probably holds a lot. And then Vancouver, I loved that. We had such a great start to that Games. We were riding high, winning quite a few games to start with. We just needed one more game to get us in there. And then I think, did we lose four in a trot at the end? It was, and it was right down to the last end or the last stone or, you just felt it was never going to be yours.
Jackie, and looking back at 2010, did you feel that you had a bit of a responsibility to look after even that team? And do you think it had a bit of an impact in how the team performed?
Yes, possibly. You've got a lot. I mean, that 25 years, you learn such a lot just in your life. And I had 25 more years worth of life experiences that I could have passed down. But she is a strong young lady, but also quite a determined young lady. So if she had something in her mind, you're not going to get through to her. And I think in a couple of times on the ice, she'd get so intense that I couldn't get through to her. And then I kind of stopped, which is sad. I remember an old psychologist of mine from Glasgow phoning up saying, oh, I was wanting to shake you. She wanted me to do something because you'd see the two of us in the television just standing there, like not speaking and just looking up at the other end. And these are just moments, I guess, you live with. I don't know whether she wanted me to say anything or whether if I did, it would be better or worse. Are you condescending or are you giving your experience? And it's difficult how somebody takes that. It was just sad because I felt like we got on really well, but it just didn't happen at the end of the games. And we finished seventh, which was my worst out of all my Olympic games to finish in. And I know Eve was disappointed as well because she does not like getting beat at all. Yeah. But it was the start of her career, and it was the experience she probably needed to boost her for the rest of her curling journey. But I would have preferred it to have finished differently. Yeah.
But moving to more recent events, you've taken the world of seniors curling by storm. What was it like over in Fredericton and How did it feel winning that goal? Did it feel different? Were you able to take it in a bit more?
Yes, I felt quite well. She says I felt quite confident going up there. Actually, it was Fredericton was a difficult one because I don't know if everybody knew that Wendy, my second player, had had a brain hemorrhage just the week after we won the Scottish Championships, and that was a we were just all busy looking at our flights and our accommodation to go away and play in the Championships, and we got a text from her husband to say that she'd been taken into intensive care down in Nine Wells and then rushed to Edinburgh to have an operation, and that was gut-wrenching because we didn't know what we were going to do. We'd already signed up Claire to come on as a coach, so luckily Claire stepped up to the mark and performed really well in that week, but so that made it a little bit difficult, but it also gave us a drive because we wanted to do it for Wendy, and I knew how gutted she would be sitting at home not actually being at that championships, because that had happened to me in 2010 after we came back from Vancouver. I fell on the ice just 10 minutes before the finals, the actual final of the competition of Scottish, and dislocated my knee, so had to go in for an operation and didn't get to go to the Worlds that year. And that is horrible when you can see your team away playing and you're not there and not part of it. So I knew how difficult it would be for Wendy. So we made sure that we connected with her, we kept her involved when we could, and that we were doing it for her as well. So yeah, Fredericton was great. I won in 2016 with Christine Cannon, Isabel Hannon, and Margaret Richardson that year as well in Karlstad, and that was great because that was my first gold at seniors. And the girls had won gold the year before in Dumfries, and then had said, "We want you to come and play with us. We want you to skip." And I was thinking, "Oh, great, no pressure. You're reigning world champions now. I've got to step in and fill big shoes." And we did it again. So that was special. I mean, they've all got special moments in it. Losing the final in South Korea was tough. Losing to Sherry Anderson, the Canadians, that year, and I blame myself for that big time. And that's what skips do. I had a couple of little half shots, and they cost us a game. But that's the swings and roundabouts. You take all the praise when you win, but you've actually got to take all the flak when you don't. And I did, and I took that one hard, losing it that year. And I knew that I wanted to come back and show the girls that we could win. So yeah, and I'm fortunate enough that I had some golds under my belt, which was great. It makes life a little bit easier for you. Mari, who is a great support on the ice, she was gutted that year when we lost the silver. And I think she felt like, oh, why am I always the bridesmaid and never the bride? And so it was really special for Katie, for Claire, and for Mary to get that gold medal, and for me to be there with them on the journey was wonderful. It's like, there you go, you're a world champion. Nobody can ever take it away from you. And the wee faces, it was great.
So, you've shared a lot about what curling's given you and what you've got for the game. As you move into this kind of, I suppose, the second curling life, which is in that kind of seniors bracket, you're obviously dominating the world there. You've been to the seniors 5 times and never failed to be on the podium. So that's pretty decent, but you look closer to home. Obviously, you talked about Curragh Aberdeen earlier, 20-year anniversary this year, but not without its problems recently. Can you share us a little bit what your role has been at Curragh Aberdeen over the years? Have you been on the committee? Have you been an office bearer? How have you been helping the venue get over? Well, its problems, but also in one of its most significant years because it's celebrating 20 great years of being a great ice rink.
I mean, it's a wonderful ice rink. I think just to go back ever so slightly, as a player, you never actually think about what goes on in the background. You just train, practice every day, turn up to events, and you go out there and you try to win medals. And I remember my mother-in-law saying to me, and my mother-in-law was a world senior champion as well, Pat Lockhart, and she said, you must always remember to pay back to the sport that's given you everything. And that resonated with me quite a lot. And after I retired from work, I felt like it was my time now to give back, because you can't do it all. You don't have enough hours in the day to be a full-time athlete and give back at the same time and have family. So when one door closes, another one has to open. And so I retired from Shell 2020, end of 2020, and then I thought, I'm going to help and go into the ice rink and do more in the ice rink. So I became the chair, which I did for 3 years. Normally you would only do it for two, but I happened to take it on just before COVID hit, and that was tough going, keeping our ice rinks open during COVID. Never mind just lately, just now, because of the high energy prices. So we managed to survive that. My husband was like, do you know that you're the first female chair of Curragh Aberdeen and the whole place might close because of you? So there was major pressure on, but it's a great ice rink. We run it really well. I think the difficulties just now across the board for many, many sports is the utility charges and costs. And I have to, I'm there. If they need me, I'm there. I'm going to be in. I'm still on the committee just now, and we've just raised some money from the dinner. We're constantly just trying to look at ways that we can keep the club going and improve it. I mean, what a great facility. We're holding world championships, Europeans. We've got the pre-qualifier for the Olympics coming this year. We've got a wonderful facility and a great manager, Tom Brewster, who runs it and gives us good ice. So we have to keep it open. But it's how you survive during the summer when we're not curling.
Yeah. And
what we need to look at.
So Tom Brewster, who you played with in the European mixed, and no surprise, guess which colour of medal you won? It was gold, wasn't it?
It was. And it was a European back then, because there wasn't enough teams playing to classify it as a world championship. But that was a great trip as well. Oh, my lucky girl! I keep forgetting about all these things. I've got a few banners up in the Curragh Aberdeen ice rink from the gold medal wins.
So when you're speaking to the youngsters, most likely in and around Curragh Aberdeen, did anyone come up to you and say anything about Jackie? I've watched your career before. I've seen videos of you on YouTube. Might be probably the most common thing that they're saying. And have any of them said that, you know, they've taken from your career in the past and how it's helped them? Because, you know, we've hosted the Scottish Juniors at Curragh Aberdeen for a while now, and it's one of the rawest moments in sport when you see the kids, when they throw the stone and they win, and the celebration is so visceral. Like this year, I particularly remember seeing Callie Souter's team have that moment when they won it, and they were so positive, and it just kind of, they let go. So do you get any of the youngsters coming up and having a chat to you, say, Jackie, talk to us about this, tell us about that, because you've lived and breathed it all?
Well, maybe sometimes, but I keep such a low profile. I think I keep a low profile. I've got a lot of people say to me, oh, have you got an Olympic gold medal and you're Rona Martin? I was like, no, I'm going to win that year. I'm the world champion. That's my biggest thing. Everybody's like, oh, were you at the Olympics? No. Well, I was, but not that one that you watched on the television. Yeah. I helped with the youngsters. That's the other thing I did is when I retired, was I went and did my coaching, level one coaching, so as I could go and help. It was fine when I had my daughter Kirsty and my son Scott playing. I could be there and I could be on the ice with them, but I wasn't qualified to do that. I was a qualified player that had played for 40 odd years, but didn't have the actual qualifications or the PVG to say I could safely go on the ice. So I've done all that as well, so as I can help out. But I spend my life feeling a little bit guilty now, because I think it's a huge commitment, and I'm always admiring all the volunteers and the people who commit their free time to help out. A lot of these sports wouldn't survive without these people. And it's
every sport needs its Alberts.
Absolutely.
Isn't it, Jackie?
Absolutely. And I'm feeling a little bit guilty just now, because I did 40 odd years of curling and I still don't know when to stop. But I'm wanting to spend some time with my husband now, because our kids are grown up, we're retired, we want to go and travel, and I want to give him some of my time. But then I also want to pay back to the sport. But It's another full-time commitment to say, yeah, I'll be there every single Wednesday, every single Saturday morning, every, because that ties you down. So I'm kind of floating between two places at the minute, saying I'm here if you need me, but I can't quite give that full-time commitment yet. But I'm definitely available if they want me.
So we're nearly at the end. There's a few rapid fire questions we've got, then Peter's got a final kind of more broad question. So I'll, if you're all right, Jackie, I'll run through these five, all right?
Let's
see how it goes. Toughest opponent you've ever faced?
Annette Norberg.
Stone colour, red or yellow?
Yellow. C4.
Funniest teammate and why?
Oh man, Sheila Swan, because she dyed her hair blue when we went to Bismarck 2002.
Right, well, we'll find pictures of that. blank ends, yes or no?
Oh no, not now.
And a moment you would relive again if you could?
Bismarck 2002.
No surprise there.
Yeah, the first one's always going to be your best one, I think, or the one that means probably more to you. Yeah.
Jackie, if you could speak to the younger you back in Les Mahago on that day, the first day you went to Hamilton Ice Rink and had a go, what would you say to her now?
Oh, wow, that's a toughie. Just keep doing what you're doing, and believe, and don't stop smiling.
So, Jackie Lockhart, how many international opinion? I had that stat to my hand. 32 major championships.
Yeah.
Right. World champion, seniors, champion. What do we call it? We just men's and women's, isn't it? It's just men's and women's.
Yeah, they just call it men's and women's. I need to keep going, Vinny. How many's Eve got? Here's a big challenge for you. No. She's got 30. She's got 34 or 35.
That's 32 for you.
See,
right?
There you go. There's me saying I'm not really competitive. I like to set myself little goals.
Right. Let me see.
Who would have believed? I think it's two females at the top of the caps for your curling world.
Well, that's awesome, actually. And there's a question that we probably should have asked that we might mix it back in, but I'll ask you it now, Jackie. You obviously were at your most prominent in the men's and women's age group when you won your world championship. Eve Rona won her Olympics. How do you think the future of women's sport looks like? Not just curling, women's sport in general.
It's grown massively, women's sport, because I have been asked that a few times. I mean, look how lucky we are now. We get almost the same coverage as men in our sport. Football's growing massively. I think the female generation have decided to take a stance and look for that equality. And that's not a bad thing. You're still going to get knocked down a few times because they say, well, we'd rather watch men's football or we'd rather see the boys play. But the females are, we need to keep battling to be equal, to get that equality there. And I think we are. It's moved on massively. Like I say, when I started curling, there was a World Juniors, the Uniroyal. It was there for the men, but there was nothing there for the females. So somebody's got to take the stance and make the first move and enter the first competition and be the best you can be to help it grow. So I think female sports growing massively, and it's great to see. I still like playing mixed curling as well, though, because I like a laugh with the guys. So I'm not all for females. I think you've got to mix it up somehow. So.
Well, that was something we saw at the Scottish Seniors this year when Peter and I were there and we were on the ice, you know, doing some of the media stuff, taking the picture. We could see there was a really, really, it looked like it was fun because both sets of teams, because the finals were at the same time, they were interacting with each other, the men and women having a laugh. And it's so important to have fun as well as be serious.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to enjoy the sport to last the longevity that it can provide you. And if you enjoy it, then that's half the battle. Yeah.
So last question here, which is an official question, it's on the list, but it might feel slightly self-serving for me to ask it. What's your hopes for the future of curling in Scotland?
I want it to grow, and I'd like better media coverage, and I don't know how you get that, because I've been trying to promote that for years now as well. I've been fortunate enough to be selected to commentate in the last three Olympics with the BBC, and I don't know how many times I've said to them, why can't you guys come and do some coverage and some television? And they said it costs them less money to film a football match than it does to actually set up in the ice rinks, to do with the lighting and the where they put all the camera work. But I think some of the streaming now is massively improved the game, and I think that's a great way forward. I want the sport to grow and grow. Listen, we're successful at it. Why can't we make it bigger than football, bigger than... I'm sure we're not going to get there in my lifetime, but I think for the people and the generation to come, if they keep playing it, then curling could be number two or number three in Scotland, rather than it being a lot further down the media table.
Well, that's the plan, and hopefully we'll get there. And hopefully we'll get there within your lifetime, because if anybody deserves to see it, it's you.
Thank you.
Jackie Lockhart, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jackie.
Cheers.
And that's a wrap for the very first episode of the Scottish Curling Podcast. A huge thanks to Jackie for being the perfect first guest. Thanks to you for listening. Whether you're a lifelong curler, a curious newcomer, or just here for a bit of a laugh, we're so glad to have you along. Today was just the beginning. We've got a whole season ahead filled with legendary voices from the rink, grassroots heroes, Olympic dreams, and big ideas to bring the sport we love into new corners of Scotland and beyond. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a wee review, and share it with your team, on or off the ice. You can also follow us on all social media channels for behind-the-scenes content, upcoming guests, and opportunities to get involved. Until next time, bye for now.